Hey, podcast listener. Are you working so hard you wonder if the money is even worth it? If you're like most CPAs I work with, you have way too much to do, you feel relentless deadline pressure, and worst of all, you feel torn between serving clients and being with family. What if I told you you could work a 40-hour week without losing a dime? I know it sounds impossible, but my Down to 40 Hours CPA Mastermind is designed for CPAs just like you who want to get their lives back. Down to 40 Hours CPA Mastermind is launching soon. In it, you'll learn how to start getting your time back week by week, make your workload manageable while still bringing in plenty of revenue, what to put in your packages and how to price them, and so much more. Don't leave your future to chance. CPA Mastermind will get you on the sane, profitable path you've been searching for. With unlimited coaching, your success is guaranteed. Go to GeraldineCarter.com to learn more. Dates, times, pricing, it's all there.
Outsourcing in India in the past has largely been, I send a tax return, I get a tax return completed back. The strategy that I'm talking about is building a global team, building your own team in another country. That is a strategy that is not sending work and getting work. It's you're building a team and you need to take a longer term approach, not a short term approach.
Welcome to the Business Strategy for CPAs podcast, where I help overworked CPAs go down to 40 hours and then down to 25 hours without giving up revenue. My name is Geraldine Carter. Today, we are talking about how to be successful when going offshore. When I listen to clients talk about their challenges, a theme that comes up regularly has to do with staff, hiring, existing staff challenges, finding the right staff, what role you're looking for, where to look, what to pay. Should you look locally, remote? Should you go offshore? Should you hire offshore? Should you contract offshore? All the questions. Because there are so many questions related to all the things hiring and staffing, I'm doing a series of podcast episodes to get insight into the variety of aspects related to hiring and staffing challenges. Making a hiring mistake is expensive in terms of money, time, and emotional investment. Making a great hire can really pay off. I want to help you hire as well as you can. So this interview is the fourth in the series, and we are talking about how to be successful when going offshore. My guest is Nick Sinclair, founder and CEO of TOA Global. TOA is the global leader in talent solutions for the accounting industry. They supply more than 3,500 great offshore people to more than 1,000 firms in the US, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the UK. Nick, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Super excited to be here and talk about this topic.
So for listeners who haven't heard your name, tell us a bit about TOA Global and why it is that you have the perspective and the expertise to talk to us on this topic.
Yeah, so I'm a former firm owner. So I own a financial planning and accounting firm in Australia for over 12 years and then stumbled into building a back office in the Philippines when I was there for an entrepreneurs organization board retreat. So I've now been doing TOA for 10 years. This is our 11th year. So I've been through all the pains and problems that our listeners have been through. And I think for me, starting TOA was by accident. It was never meant to be. I simply started it for my own back office, found some real value in it. I then had firms coming to me saying, look, we don't want to set up in another country being the Philippines. Can we just put people in with you? I had some spare desks. I'll have entrepreneurial traits. So I said yes too many times. I said yes that many times that we're now, 3,800 people and putting on about 100 to 150 people a month. So it turned into another business where I exited out of my accounting and financial planning business and now just focus on helping accounting firms solve the talent crisis.
So how does somebody know when they're at the point that they're ready to go overseas, to go offshore? Because presumably not everybody is ready just yet. How do you know when you flip into that space where you're like, I need to look at this offshore option?
Yeah, look, I think it's interesting. I mean, in Australia, we're now in our 11th year of helping serve Australian firms. And if you look at the market, the majority of market are doing it. There'd be very few firms that are not. The US, we're 5.5 years into, and I think that the market's definitely shifting now where a large majority of firms are now considering it if they're not already doing it. We're well past the early adopter stage. I think for me, though, if we take a step back, I really focus on building a people strategy for a firm, and I believe there's three key aspects to that. There's you need to have a local team. and you need to focus on accelerating the careers of the local team so that you can take them up to manager level, not in 9 years, but how do you do that in half the time? And then how do you halve that again? So how do you attract really strong talent locally, but also accelerate their careers? You do need a global component to it because there is a huge amount of talent. To give you an example, we get over 2,000 applications every single month for roughly 150 to 200 roles. So there's no shortage, and that's just one country. If we look at South Africa, which is another country we serve, we would get hundreds and hundreds of applications for every role. So there is no real shortage of talent. It's a matter of looking where that talent is. But that talent isn't local. They can't talk to your client and meet with your client for coffee or lunches or whatever it is. So I think it is around you do need local talent. You need a strategy for that. You need global talent. You need a strategy for that. The other component that we really see is in the future is you're going to need to have freelance and contract talent. So talent that you can ramp up and down as the capacity is needed. So we really look at it as what is your overall strategy for people? What percentage of people should be global versus local? If you're a firm of, say, 20 people, then generally 50% of your firm could be global, 50% of it could be local, and then your freelancers and contractors are depending on what you need to ramp up or ramp down with. So that's really how we look at that. The reality is times are shifting, AI, technology, automation, all these things are coming in. We see that at the moment it's really a pyramid. We've got graduates that progress all the way through to managers. We see that, and Alan Colton's a big driver of this theory is around it's going to turn into a diamond. You're still going to have your partners at the top, but you're going to have a significant less amount of people down the bottom, meaning you're going to have to bring everyone up and through into that middle part. So if you look at a diamond shape, we're going to have more people in the middle, less people at the bottom. So global definitely forms part of that strategy. But unfortunately, most firms, when they come to us, say, look, we can't find anyone locally. Can you find someone with 7 years of American experience in another country for a third of the cost? And the reality is the answer is no. It is a longer term strategy. You do need to train them. What you can find is amazing accounting talent that has great accounting skills, some of the best in the world, but they just need to be trained on the American nuances. And we help with some of that in our model. And the reality is that if it takes a graduate 2 years to get up and running in America, it takes them roughly 6 months in the Philippines, purely because they would have 5 to 7 years of accounting experience. They would be a CPA in the Philippines, for example. So, yeah, there is no right or wrong time. I think it's around what's your strategy, because building a global team is not necessarily easy. I think that's the other thing. It's not easy. It does take work, but it will be one of the best things that you can do for your firm in the long term.
So how about for firms that are on the smaller side of 20? What do you see as their breakdown in terms of onshore or local versus offshore?
Yes, we generally say 5 to 20 team members locally, you would have up to 50% of your workforce, or you'd have, you know, 10 offshore, 10 locally. If you have less than 5, we typically see that ratio 2-to-1, meaning we've got one client, for example, 5 team members locally, he's got 10 team members in the Philippines. So you actually have a higher ratio offshore than you do locally for the smaller firms. As the firms get bigger, the percentage reduces. And that's just because of the size of the firm. For example, a 1,000-person firm might have 200 to 300 people globally, but then they would have 700 locally.
So why is it that for the smaller firms, they'd have potentially more than 50% offshore?
I think the cost effectiveness of it. So you can get 3 for the cost of 1 locally. So that gives you instant capacity. So a smaller firm, it's just the reality is the cost efficiency, because their revenue is lower, makes more sense to have a global team in a higher way. And managing a team of that size offshore is within the realms of a small team locally. But as the team expands and grows more, like a 20-person firm, for example, they need more managers and more senior people here. To a smaller firm, you could have 2 or 3 really strong people locally and then have pretty much the whole back end in that global team environment.
Gotcha. Where do people most commonly start with the role or roles that they want to fill? Do they start with the small stuff with people who have sort of the base level, or do they start higher up the food chain? And do you see a right or wrong way to go about that, or just know what you need?
Yeah, I think it's one of the biggest challenges when firms go to start building a global team. They think that they're going to have all this experience like you would with someone in America. When the reality is if you look at, for example, us, we're 3,800 team members. We're the largest provider of accountants in the Philippines to global accounting firms. If you put all of our competitors together, we're still probably bigger than all of them. So if you do, there's about 10,000 people that have got US experience maximum, probably even a lot less. So there isn't a huge amount of talent that actually has that experience, but there's a huge demand for it. So what we typically say to firms is, if you can't find a senior or a manager in America, don't go looking in a country where it's 70% cheaper and think you're going to get that, because it's not realistic. Those unicorns don't exist. The one or two may, but you'll be paying pretty close to local rates. So the approach that we always take with firms is, don't try with the hardest, most complex work and put that in a global environment when you're learning how to run in another country. Typically what we say is it's a triangle approach. We say, what is the most repetitive, process-orientated work that you could push down? So we pretty much start at the level. We have a process we take our clients through where we basically get them to write down the work from a manager all the way through the junior. Everyone writes down what is the work that is process, routine and mundane that they could push down to the next level of accountant. So if you're a manager, what could you push to the senior? If you're a senior, what can you push to the intermediate? Intermediate to the juniors or the staff accountants. And then the staff accountants, what can we push off you? And what we typically find is a bunch of work that the global team can start on. And then once they get up and running and they're good at that, then we get the next level work and then the next level work. So the biggest challenge is that when firms go global, they think that I'm going to get someone that can do end-to-end process. They're going to be senior. They're going to have all these skills and I'm going to save 80 grand by doing that. So we go, no, you need to think about it differently. You need to go, what is the most routine and mundane work? How do we push work off everyone? So if we free up our juniors locally, they can be trained to do more higher level work quicker, because it's easier to train someone that's with you as opposed to in another country with a completely different culture that you've got to learn and understand. So we work with our clients to progressively ramp it up. Now, to give you an example of a firm in Texas, for example, they've been a client of ours for 7 years. They've got 10 manager level people in their firm. Five of those are in the Philippines, and those five are managing American team members and Philippine team members. So you can get them up to that level, but it isn't going to happen in the first 12 months. It's a strategy. It's not a tactic. And I think this is where outsourcing in India in the past has largely been, I send a tax return, I get a tax return completed back. This is about building, the strategy that I'm talking about is building a global team, building your own team in another country. That is a strategy that is not sending work and getting work. It's you're building a team and you need to take a longer term approach, not a short term approach. So that's the big difference with, you know, the traditional outsourcing versus what we call offshoring.
Got it. Okay. So who is the person for whom this is right? That they're like, okay, yes, I get it. Offshore team as strategy, not just a tactic to get work off my plate, send it off at 5 p.m. and have it back on my desk all done and tidy the following morning. So who's the kind of business owner, who's the kind of accountant that has their head in that space compared to the one that's like, oh, that's not what we want. We just want to send the work overseas happen while we sleep and wake up and it's done.
Yeah, I think it's someone that wants to build a business versus someone that is wanting to build a marketing list. I mean, if I was to sell my accounting firm, I would want to have a highly capable and skilled team, doesn't matter where they sit globally. To otherwise, I've got a list of people that I'm sending it to a provider. The value in my eyes, if I was looking to buy that firm, is significantly reduced because you're just buying a list of names and using an outsourced provider. I think the other reality is outsourcing is not easy either. So you send a job, you get a job. What you send them, how you brief them, the work involved in reviewing it. It's not just simply I send a tax return, it comes back just like I would if I was to do it. It's not that easy. So it is still a challenge, but I think for me it's around who is the person that should do this. Its reality is if you want to grow your firm and you want to build a business and you want to build a team that is sustainable and can grow with you, then this is a strategy to implement as part of the overall people strategy. If you're looking for just getting work off your desk in the short term, then yeah, there are tactics that you can do. There's even local software companies in the US that like Taxfile and that have local teams that do the outsourcing. So it really comes back to what's the strategy and the problem you're trying to solve. If it's just a short-term fix, this is going to be too hard. I can tell you now, don't waste your time, because it isn't easy. But anything that isn't easy is worth doing, because the result long-term is there. And I think that this is about building a long-term sustainable talent pipeline, not just how do we fix a problem right now.
Yeah.
They're people like us. They're humans. They want careers. They want progression. You know, they just happen to live in a different country to you and I. And the benefit of one of the countries we're in being the Philippines is that they're trained, everything's American from birth, American English, American accounting. I mean, I was there last week and everything's half American. I feel like I'm in America when I'm in the Philippines half the time because of all the restaurants and that are all the same.
So let's talk about buying and selling for a moment. How is the marketplace looking on accounting firms who have offshore teams? How is it impacting the multiples, and how are the banks thinking about it? Because they need to be on board too.
We've had a few clients that have retired and sold, and I haven't seen multiples change at this stage, to be honest. I haven't, and I've asked a few M&A people in America as well, what's the multiple difference if you have a global team, which is your team, versus having an outsource function versus not having it all? And there's nothing that, no evidence that they have in multiples. But I know that the clients that of ours that are buying, when they're buying other firms and they have a back office that they can slide straight in, it generally is a lot more attractive than one that struggles with staffing. It's all local. I mean, there's pros and cons. If it's all local, then they can then plug in the global and make it profitable a lot quicker. But I don't think there's real evidence around any changes. From a banking point of view, the reality is most of the banks have got teams in the countries we're talking about. So it's not really new for them. It doesn't really affect the lending per se from what I've seen. But again, I've got no hard evidence on that. But yeah, I've never had a client that hasn't been able to be acquired because of a global team and a lending constraint. So I don't really see it as, I see it as quite normal now, to be honest, is all big companies have been doing offshoring and outsourcing for 20 years. It's now only more accessible to firms like this now.
Gotcha. So what are some of the classic mistakes beyond just thinking of it as a tactic instead of a strategy? What are some of the other classic mistakes that you see people fall into and you kind of just, you know, rub your forehead and you're like, God, I could have seen that coming a mile away.
Yeah, look, I'm smiling now and laughing because we've built a whole course on this. So we call it offshore best practice. We've seen thousands of firms go through this, and ones that do it really well, ones that it's absolute disaster, and everything in between. So we've built an 8-module course on this. And that's what something that all of our clients go through as part of their induction is that we've got leadership trainers and trainers that take them through that. So the biggest things where firms get it wrong is they don't have a clear strategy. So they go into it without a clear strategy. They're humans like us. They just live in a different country. They want career progression. They want to feel part of the firm. So where firms really go wrong is where they treat them like an outsourced person as opposed to an actual team member. And there's a few subcomponents to that. If you've got a team member, you need to see them in person. So you need to either bring them to America or you need to go and visit them. You don't not see them. So one of the things is that this is a team member of yours. They just happen to be in another country. So if you're a fully remote firm, I'm sure you get all your team members together once a year. If you don't, you probably should, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So the same with a global team. You need to treat them. You need to build engagement with them. So if you're doing an end of tax season event in America, then you need to be doing something for them over there as well. So it's really treating them like you would with anyone locally. They just happen to be, you've now got a global office. So that's probably the big one. So having a strategy which builds into culture plans, engagement plans. The second one is really understanding the culture of the country where you're operating. And every country has different cultures. And one of the big things with the Philippines, it's a culture of pleasing. So they will tell you they understand, even if they don't, because they don't want to let you down. They feel like they're letting you down. The other thing is around the hierarchy of needs. They have, in the Philippines, for example, a real hierarchy around community, family, then themselves. So if you're going to be giving them a bonus, the way that the structures work over there is the money goes to the family in most cases. So giving them a cash bonus is not the best way to reward them because they don't get it. The family gets it. So there's little things like that. If you look at the hierarchy of needs of the Western world largely, and I'll use Australians, I'm an Aussie, so I can use this. It's about me. Me, family, if they call community, what's that? So the hierarchy needs is very opposite. They're very community and family focused. And they're very religious in ways, which is a great thing. But there's subtle differences with how we operate. We're very, like, I'm a very direct person, for example. I love to keep, I mean, one of our values is keep it real. So I'll say things quite direct. But if you were to do that with a Filipino team member without building that rapport and trust, they will leave and never come back. You'll never hear from them again. So it's about how do you communicate with them in a way that is taking, in essence, their cultural nuances versus ours. So that's a lot of the things that we really need to consider when you're doing it. So treat them like your own team. Make sure that you see them, build engagement and culture plans so that they feel the same as what we are, and build it as a strategy long term, which means they want career progression. If they don't feel like they're going to have career progression, and which would mean salary advancements along the way and things like that, then they will leave you, just like someone locally would. So they're no different. So don't treat them like an outsourced person is probably the highlight comment.
Got it.
They're probably the big ones that people go to this conception that, oh, it's going to be easy. I'll just send this work to Mary and Mary will get it done, and I don't need to talk to Mary. I can just send everything over email. Well, would you do that with someone locally? No. Why would you even think about doing that with someone that's a 15-hour flight away?
Yeah, it just has this sort of mythical idea that you can just send it at 5 p.m. and get it back the following morning without having to ever talk to the person. But that's not what that's not the arrangement that you're engaged in.
No, and the good thing is with our team members, they do work night shifts. So they do work American hours. Mm. So they are aligned with it, but it's the same concept. You don't email them and not talk to them. You need to have regular rhythms like you would do with your local team.
So if a person was to start the process, let's just say an accountant who's in the teeth of tax season right now, and in a few weeks they'll be free, and they're thinking about, okay, ready to start building an offshore team, what's a typical timeline look like? Because a lot of people who are hiring, they're hiring because they have work coming out their ears and they need help getting that work done. So they need a person yesterday or last month would be better. And they want to think that they can, you know, put a job description up somewhere and an amazing candidate is just going to ring them up and start working tomorrow. And they're just going to like right onto the highway going 85 and, you know, fold right into the team and do great right away. I'm obviously exaggerating, but what's a normal timeline for a person who makes the decision to go in this direction?
So there's two parts of this that I'll answer. So the first one is for someone, because we have trained team members. So we hire people, put them through a 7-week American tax training, and then they're available. And we have cohorts of 25 to 35 finishing every single month. So depending on how many clients have taken those already, we could have someone within a matter of weeks or a month at the latest. So that is one way that we can help clients if they want them to be trained and not have to do that component of it themselves. If it was what we call a business as usual, which is we're just hiring someone that doesn't have any training or any US experience, then typically we allow 30 days for the recruitment process and then the notice period of 30 days. So it's about 60 days from end to end, which would be largely the longest time period. Our recruitment timeframe at the moment sitting at about 24 days. Now, we've got a database of over 65,000 accountants in the Philippines, so we've got 50% of the accountants in our database or active accountants in the Philippines. So it's more a matter of what's the right fit for them. But, yeah, I would generally allow 2 months. So if someone's like, I need to get things finished for April 15, the reality is by the time you get them, you onboard them, it's like someone locally. It takes 60 days to recruit locally. We do local recruitment as well. We just started that service. And it's 60 days as a minimum. Then you need to onboard them appropriately and ramp them up. It's, you know, you're talking 90 days, 3 to 4 months to get someone fully, you know, operational. So it isn't a short-term fix. And this is why I keep going back to that point of this is a longer-term strategy. It's not something that's going to solve your immediate problem right now. But it can definitely fix it for next tax season and for Q3 and Q4.
Yeah, no, I was thinking more like for the person who's thinking they're not going to start this until they come up for air after tax season.
Yeah.
So what are some hallmark signs that maybe it's not going smoothly? Like maybe you've just, you know, nobody's fault, but you've just made a bad match hire. What should a person be on the lookout for?
I think it's a couple of things. I mean, everyone needs to know what success is on a daily basis, whether you're local, global, everyone needs to know what success is, meaning what are my KPIs to be successful? So you'll know with your global team if they're not achieving those. It's normally one of two things. It's either a bad process, and having a global team exposes weak process. So if your process is strong and you know that it's not process, then the second thing I look at is training. Have they had the appropriate training? And you might say, yes, the most technical person in our office has trained them, but they may actually be the worst trainer. So you need to be able to tick off to say, do they have the right process? Have they appropriately been trained, and we're confident that the training is appropriate? Then the third bucket is it's a performance issue, meaning it is the person. But the majority of the time, like if you look at our involuntary attrition rate, meaning people are made fired, is probably the easy way to say it, for non-performance, it's like very few percent a year. Like the actual performance issues are not normally performance issues. I always look at it and go, is it process? Is it training? Or is it performance? And it's normally one of the first two buckets, to be honest. They haven't been given the appropriate training to be successful, or the process is really, really weak.
I love that. So troubleshoot in that order, process, training, and then performance.
Yeah. And if it is performance, then that's okay. It's around where did it go wrong? So how do we get the right person in that role next time? Is the fourth component is really around expectation of the level of work that they can do. So a lot of clients for some reason think that they're going to have, you know, 5 years of American tax experience. They're just not going to have that. So you need to treat them like a graduate level, but the reality is it won't take 2 years to get them up to that intermediate time. It'll take up to 6 months. But again, it comes back to the allocation of work that they're doing. If you're trying to get them to do end-to-end full tax work within the first 3 months, there's a high chance that they will fail. But if you've got them just doing elements of it, then there's a high chance that they will succeed. So that sort of links into the process part, but it is almost its own bucket where it's, are you giving them the right work for the level of where they're at now based on the training that they've got and the process and experience they have?
That is so good. Words of wisdom to live by. Nick, this has been super helpful. If people want to reach out to you, how can they find out more about you and about Toa Global?
Yeah, they can go to toaglobal.com, or I'm very active on LinkedIn. So find me, Nick Sinclair, on LinkedIn. More than happy to help chat. I think this is, you know, people is my passion, and the reality is I think that global teams form part of the strategy, but they're not the only part of the strategy. But the key is, and I know you help firms with this, is help them to actually build a strategy. So it's not just throwing a dart at a dartboard and hoping you're going to succeed with talent. Talent is not easy, but when you get it right, geez, this strategy can really work well.
Awesome. And hope is not a strategy.
No.
Nick Sinclair, this has been so great. Thank you so much for coming on the Business Strategy for CPAs podcast.
Thanks for having me. Really enjoyed it.
Hi again. Would you rather spend your weekends outside playing or at your desk? In Down to 40 Hours CPA Mastermind, we put an end to overworking while maintaining revenue. Go to geraldinecarter.com to learn more. Dates, times, pricing, it's all there.